If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we'll look ahead to the 2023 National Road Series, which starts this Sunday with the Inexo Cams Women's Cycle Classic. Sean Botley from Hutchinson Brother UK, who's ridden every edition of this trailblazing mixed surface race, will be our guide. We'll celebrate a superb victory for Sean's Hutchinson Brother UK teammate, Tammy Miller, at the Peaks two-day stage race, and investigate whether high-quality National B races are evidence of renewal from the grassroots. Race organiser Deb John, co-founder of Cold Dark North, will share her insights. We'll reflect on what might accurately be described as British road racing's winter of discontent and discuss the wider effects of an economic downturn on the domestic sport. And we'll celebrate the many reasons still to be cheerful, from the continued success of young British riders to August's UCI World Championships in Glasgow. Now joining me to discuss all of these issues and many more is my co-host Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Hi Tim, good to be here.
Well, as we mentioned off air, Phil, there's a lot going on in domestic road racing at the moment, and unfortunately, a lot of it is very bleak. The Tour Series is on hiatus until 2024, while race organisers the Sweet Spot Group search for new backers. Their strategy is to target local authorities in larger towns and cities. Now, arguably, Sweet Spot faces an even tougher challenge with its women's tour, a world-class women's race facing a £500,000 funding shortfall despite the support of Brother UK. They've launched a crowdfunding campaign, but let's not put a gloss on this. They've got a mountain to climb. We've seen another British-registered UCI Continental men's team fold. This time it's 8085, which is Tim Elverson's team, a squad that's been at the sharp end of domestic road racing for a decade. That is a very serious loss. Ribble Weltite, another leading British-registered UCI Continental men's team, they announced over the winter that they wouldn't return to the domestic peloton in 2023, and Ribble has since launched the Ribble Collective, with a series of riders competing across different disciplines. More positively, Simon Howes, the general manager of our own Brother UK Orientation Marketing Development team, has found new sponsors for his UCI women's team. The squad that last year raced as Cams Basso will this year compete as Das Hansling. And while we're continuing on a positive theme, Brother UK, well, we've renewed with both of our women's teams. The team that last year raced as Brother UK LDN will this year compete as Hutchinson Brother UK, and we've moved across there to facilitate Hutchinson's arrival as co-title sponsor. And of course, we've renewed with Brother UK Orientation Marketing, and we continue as official print and results partner and presenting partner for the Green Zones, both at the Women's Tour and the Tour of Britain. Phil, are these the toughest times for domestic road racing that you've witnessed in the time that you've been following this sport closely?
Yes, they seem to be, Tim. I've been following the sport now domestically for around 10 years or so, and I can't remember a time when there seemed to be so much negative news about. And of course, part of our job here is to not dwell on that necessarily, but just to really, I guess, talk around what are at the moment a few uncomfortable truths. However, it's not all bad news. There is some really good stuff going on, which we're going to cover today, I know. But absolutely, I can't recall a time when not only was it just about the entire scene, but sponsorship, large races not finding commercial sponsors, and teams folding concurrently. So there seems to be quite a storm here at the moment, doesn't there? And I guess what we're interested in is what will the pathway be through this, and what will the scene look like after a lot of all this stuff has played out?
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, you're perfectly placed, Phil, to comment on this as the leader of a major business. From my much narrower perspective as a cycling journalist, it's tempting to view this as a phenomenon unique to the sport, but there is a significant downturn occurring in the wider economy, isn't there?
Without a doubt. And when these downturns occur, the first thing to go is what we call discretionary spending in businesses. So this is businesses buttoning down the hatches in the same way that households are buttoning down their hatches. Businesses do the same thing. They examine all their costs, where they're spending money. And of course, we've all got a lot of cost pressures in the business right now, including payroll. So all the people that work for my business, or, and of course, the news is dominated by pay awards and strikes in the public sector. And so money has to be found to fund these pay increases that people are asking for and expectations of employees. And so discretionary spending, and these can include sponsorships and marketing investments, various other things, tend to get curtailed, put on hold or ceased, and the money gets swept into different buckets. So whether you're in the public sector or you're in the private sector, both sectors are really under a lot of pressure right now. And that clearly is playing out now in the environment that we're seeing for people like Sweetspot, having great difficulty finding somebody with big enough pockets, frankly, to fund as title sponsor the Women's Tour.
Yeah, I mean, another excellent point. And Sweetspot mentioned local authorities specifically, didn't they, when announcing a pause this year for the tour series. Councils, local authorities, call them what you like, these are the lifeblood of the tour series, aren't they?
Yes. Public sector, local councils particularly, are the primary income stream for the tour series. Of course, private sponsors like Brother, that's fine. We've sponsored the tour series for many years. We actually ceased the sponsorship of the tour series at the end of last year to focus on the Women's Tour and the Tour of Britain. However, councils play a really big role in the tour series. You know, it's a very simple business model, really. Local council pays Sweetspot to come and put the bike race on. Local council then invites all the people that live in its vicinity to come and watch it. It links into active travel policies. It's good for city centres and town centres because it brings visitors. So that means the economy, local restaurants and pubs do well out of it. And fundamentally, then a spotlight gets put on that city when it's on the telly. It's a very simple model, really. But we know now, because of everything that's happening in government and, of course, with the cost of living crisis, councils are really struggling because, of course, their budgets are being cut. They are having to review all the services that they provide. And as a result, then, of course, they need to look at the investments that they're making. And despite the requirement for things like more active travel, if the money's not there or they're not providing the core services that they should be providing, then of course everyone's looking at them and they have to explain why they're spending money on certain things. I think the guys at Sweetspot were just having great difficulty just trying to get the funding envelope opened up to fund 6-8 rounds of the tour series.
Well, extremely challenging conditions across the board, whether private or public, as you very succinctly described there, Phil. Well, we said we're going to be positive, and goodness knows we're going to try. And we've got a real reason to be cheerful in the success of the national B scene. I mean, we can sit here and scratch our heads and wonder what's to be done about the domestic road scene, Phil, but there are people like the Yomp Bonk crew, Cold Dark North, Mark Etches, who are just getting out there and putting on high-quality national B events. Is this evidence of the sport recalibrating, and rather than waiting for a top-down solution, pursuing a grassroots solution instead?
Well, without a doubt, what we can't be is dissatisfied with what's going on around the B road races. These organisers are doing a brilliant job and putting on fantastic races. And of course, what is the difference between A's and B's? Well, lots of technical things. And one of the organisers, I think Deb John, is going to actually talk about that in a little bit more detail, perhaps when she comes on. But the reality is there's lower cost to organise. There's nowhere near the same amount of governance around those particular races. So they're actually a little bit easier to put on. And as a result of that, we're seeing that these organisers are reacting to that, saying, okay, if there aren't enough races, we'll put these races on. And very interestingly, what we're seeing now is a lot of the elite and UCI teams, because of the lack of A races, dropping into the B races. So this could be a bit of a turning point where effectively a lot of these teams do turn up at the B races fundamentally to make sure they keep their race fitness, keep the riders on the road. So that should mean that the Bs might become a very, very competitive scene. I mean, it's already competitive, but suddenly it could be a very, very different scene to that that has been in the past.
Absolutely. I mean, just look at the national B races we've had already this season. Purse Pedal Race won by Jack Rootkin-Gray, who had a stellar domestic campaign last year for St. Pirin and lit up the Tour of Britain as well as posting some impressive results in Belgium. His teammate, Alexander Richardson, won the Jock Wadley. Teenage sensation Kat Ferguson won the women's race at Cape and Ray a week before winning the Junior Trofeo Binder in Italy. I mean, measured by any standard, these are very high-quality riders, and they're choosing national B races to start their seasons. Now, a moment ago, Phil, you mentioned Deb John from Cold Dark North, and I managed to catch up with Deb shortly after another hugely successful edition of the Cape and Ray Road Race. Let's hear now from Deb, who can provide an inside line on the challenges and satisfactions of organising a national B race.
I love racing. I just love it. It's such a great spectacle. Having raced Cape and Ray myself and known how difficult it was, when I was given the chance to organise it, I leapt at it. I don't know if you call it fun, but the satisfaction and the response from women and men has just been fantastic, incredibly satisfying. It has to be a closed road for it to be a national A, which involves a lot more expense in terms of the police closing the roads, barriers, the equipment that's used, timing chips, etc., etc. So those things are quite difficult. The roads are very narrow in places, so geographically, practically, it might be difficult, but I would really have to talk to somebody else about those requirements. I don't know that I would want to take that on because that seems more organising with large bodies like local councils and county councils and raising vast amounts of funds, tens of thousands. I'm not sure if I really want to go into that, although I would always be up for helping or being involved in doing something like that. There's a basic standard of kilometres you have to cover for it to meet a national B standard. They can be less depending on the altitude climbed. Cape and Ray has over 1,500 metres of climbing in the race, so it means it doesn't have to meet the limit of kilometres. You can do slightly less. It depends on the circuit and what the BC risk assessment for the circuit is and how many people it allows. You can sometimes ask for dispensations, but in all honesty, I think that 60 is probably a good number for the courses that we have around here. Couldn't run them without the NEGs, without the expertise of the comms who know the courses, who have to drive the courses beforehand. We put out all the signs. We have a great guy, Alan Roper, here, who always delivers all the signs. He's incredibly helpful about everything to do with signage. We put those out the night before, the day before. The comm will drive the course first thing in the morning, taking notice of where everything is, the weather, the state of the roads, etc. So he or she can deliver a good speech to the riders, informing them of any potential problems. And I couldn't do it without the accredited marshals, which is a fantastic thing the British Cycling have introduced. They get trained. They have the ability to be able to stop traffic for a certain amount of time. They have a uniform, so people take notice of them rather than just somebody waving a red flag. And I couldn't do it without the small team of people who helped me in all my races. Some of them aren't even cyclists, but they really love the buzz of being involved in organising it. So that's great.
So great to hear that from Deb, Phil. I mean, she's somebody that you know personally. I know that you've experienced the Cold Dark North proposition firsthand.
Indeed, I have. I went up to join Deb's and Toby on a ride. It was some years ago now, Tim, it's got to be said, but absolutely beautiful roads. We did a fantastic route on the, I think it was the Loon Coal Road. Beautiful, beautiful, very, very challenging climbs. But Debbie is a very, very capable individual on a bike. And she's about half my size and about half my weight. Trying to chase her up any gradient was near impossible. But anyway, her and Toby doing a great job up there. Absolutely great job. I think they are a template for really what can be achieved, just really with, I guess, a bit of effort and determination, coordination, and some willing volunteers.
Absolutely. I mean, chapeau to Cold Dark North, who this year are organising the National Hill Climb Championships on the Struggle. So fair play to them. And if we're looking for a reason to be cheerful, then the continued success of Deb and Toby, proper Northern Road Race series, I mean, that is something to celebrate.
Peaks 2 Day looked a really cracking little race as well. Looked really challenging. All the teams were up for it. It looked a cracking race.
Well, you made a very good point a moment ago, Phil, when you asked what is the difference between a National A and a National B race, specifically in terms of quality. And if you look at the start list for the Peaks 2 Day, you'd have to say very little, especially on the women's side, where 2 out of the 3 British registered UCI Continental teams were present. I mean, the route too, I think, bears comparison, although NatBs are much shorter than National A races. Mark Botley, the manager of Brother UK Orientation Marketing, described the route to me as, quote, savage, and wondered how many riders would have finished if stage 2 particularly had been any longer. It was interesting to see Ed Clancy, no less, 3-time Olympic champion, just turn up at a race almost in his backyard. And Ed made the point on Twitter that whatever's happening to the sport at the higher levels, at the grassroots, at races like the Peaks 2 Day, the scene is thriving. Well, the new National Road Series is nearly upon us. It starts this Sunday with the Inexo Cams Women's and Junior Cycle Classic, and we'll discuss this in detail a bit later. But for now, let's take a high-level view of the series. And the most recent statement for British Cycling was to announce an extra round. The men's competition moves to 5 rounds and the women's competition moves to 6 rounds. And that additional round will be held in East Cleveland. Now, East Cleveland has previously hosted a round of the National Road Series in the form of the Klondike, which proved a happy hunting ground for Brother UK sponsored teams the last time it was held, back in 2019. Anna Henderson won the women's race for Brother UK Tifosi Power by On Form. That's the team now called Das Hansling. While Scott Waits finished 3rd for Vitas Pro Cycling Team powered by Brother UK. The National Circuit Series, along with the National Championships, which we now know will be held this June in Redcar in Cleveland, is British Cycling's other major proposition in domestic racing. That has 6 rounds for men this year, 5 for women, and both competitions include the showpiece events in Otley and Ilkley. Now, as we mentioned earlier, there are just 2 British registered UCI Continental men's teams following the sudden conclusion of 8085, St Piran, who are doing a really good job, and Trinity Racing, which exists to get young riders into the World Tour, and my goodness, they've had some success with that. There are 3 British registered UCI Continental women's teams this season. That's AWOL O'Shea, Das Hansling, and Life Plus Wahoo. Phil, we've already said that the National B scene is thriving, but let's consider that for a moment from the other end of the telescope. The amount of National A races held each year, well, it grows fewer and fewer. I mean, have we reached the ceiling of what can be achieved with a volunteer-led model?
You'd think so. Given where things are at right now, I'm sure everybody around the scene, people who've raced for years, retired professionals, commissaires, you name it, everybody's looking at this saying, we feel sad about it, but the reality is it's going through some restructuring, some reorganizing, some recalibrating. But clearly this, I think it just needs a root and branch review here. Somebody needs to lead a root and branch review of this scene. And I know there's been an awful lot going on social media and traditional media talking about the sort of the demise of the scene. So it will find its way through. Whether it will look like what it looks like today, we will see. But I think the question that perhaps also needs to be asked is what will the value be for a UCI Continental team if they're going to still race in the UK with only having 2 teams currently on the men's side who are UCI and 3 women? Then fundamentally, the number of teams now able to compete and provide competitive racing in these A races is beginning to reduce. So naturally, they're going to end up going abroad to get their race programs totally fulfilled. And the number of seats now available for riders coming through the system, of course, is also becoming smaller, because really that's been the springboard, has it not? You know, to get yourself onto a continental team, to perhaps springboard up into World Tour. So the reality is that with the scene dwindling, becoming smaller, then fundamentally everything becomes smaller around that. So the scene itself begins to shrink. So somehow all of these stakeholders, and one would have to say perhaps being led by the Federation, British Cycling, need to look at this and say, okay, well, what do we now do? Let's have a strategic plan that we can use to go and rebuild things. But clearly there are some difficulties back at BC, of course, recruiting for a new chief executive again. As a result, the Federation will be just sort of ticking along right now without much strategic intent. And so that can only mean that the length of the road, the runway to try and resolve all of this, just gets longer and longer and longer. So I'm not sure how much longer we can wait for an intervention of some kind. So in the short term, the B racing scene will just carry on as usual. But fundamentally, I think a root and branch review is going to be needed of how the sport funds itself, how people like Sweet Spot, who are running some of the largest races in the country, which bring overseas teams, hundreds of thousands of people out onto the streets, then if there's ever an advert for active travel and the joys of cycling, then there it is. So maybe it even may require some sort of government funding. Who knows?
Well, I think all options have to be on the table now, don't they? I mean, we don't want to get past the point of no return with this. You make a very good point about an unfortunate lack of strategic direction and leadership at British Cycling while they search for a new chief executive. But something has to be done now, I think, to try and place this scene on an even keel.
I think there's another interesting point, Tim, that I actually looked at a spreadsheet earlier today, and I looked at the teams that we have sponsored since we've been sort of sponsoring within the domestic scene. And that all begun in 2017. And if you look at all of those team names, almost all of them have changed. So they've either changed or failed. So either the team has started as one name, gained new sponsors, which is great, and year after year, either sponsors have been retained or left, or the teams have failed themselves. And that would normally be as a result of a, you know, commercial sponsor changing their mind. And you can look at all of those teams now and go, that thread goes through them all fundamentally. Interestingly, obviously 80, 85 as it was, obviously that started out as Kenyan Iceberg, if you remember, in 2017. And we were one of the first sponsors of that team. Back then, that team's had a number of different sponsors. And of course, it then came into 80, 85. And of course, I can only imagine that 80, 85 may have been impacted by all the things that were going on in the Silicon Valley Bank drama. That could have been influential on their decision to stop discretionary expenditure, which, of course, suddenly at very short notice meant the end of the team. Nobody wants that, but the funding model of cycling teams has never been any different. It just goes from year to year to year, doesn't it? And these teams come towards the end of every year, hoping that they've got a sponsor for the following year. It's never been any different. That's the key thing. And it is probably not going to change as far as the commercials are concerned. But it's how do these teams continue to provide returns for their sponsors if the racing scene is shrinking? It relies on the riders being on the road, generating the publicity, generating the awareness, creating content and all that kind of good stuff. So everything is linked and interdependent.
Well, some valuable observations there, Phil. Elite and professional cycling are unquestionably a complex system where interdependency is key and where some kind of intervention, whether that be from the Federation or even the government, now seems increasingly likely. Well, let's try to keep things positive. Let's move on now to discuss the opening race of the 2023 National Road Series. And that, of course, is the Inexo Cams Women's and Junior Cycle Classic. This is one of the most cherished races on the domestic calendar. And it's brilliant that despite all of the challenges we've discussed, it returns year after year. A separate race for men, of course, which is a UCI certified event and so attracts an international field. The women's race is now firmly established as a fixture on the National Road Series. It has a new title sponsor, Inexo, which provides replacement vehicles for motorists caught up in no-fault claims. And CAMS, the Cycle Accident Management Service, well, last year they sponsored Simon Howe's UCI Continental Women's teams. It's great that they're on board with Colin Clue's race. Hutchinson Brother UK is sending a very strong squad following their overall victory at the Peak's two-day race with Tammy Miller, and Brother UK Orientation Marketing will be literally racing on home soil. Team manager Mark Botley is a recognised expert on the Cycle Classic. He grew up around those lanes, he's raced on them, and he knows every inch of the course. Phil, how important is the Cycle Classic, do you think, to the domestic women's road scene?
Well, I think that is a genuinely brilliant race. The combination of on-road and off-road, it's a fabulous circuit. It's always challenging. Weather conditions can change it. However, I think it's really credit to Colin Clues and the team of people and the volunteers that put that race on, because he has consistently run that race since, was it 2014, Tim, when juniors first started racing? I think James Shaw won it that year. And of course, the women's edition from 2016. Now, that's meant for all of those years. He's got the funding, the organization, he's got everything absolutely spot on. And the only year that race hasn't run, of course, was the year 2020 when we had COVID. So I think it's a very, very important race in the domestic calendar, no doubt. I think everybody, all the riders, really look forward to that race. We have previously talked about the role of neutral service. Obviously, Brother are no longer sponsoring the neutral service vehicles any longer. However, it is the busiest race of the year for neutral service vehicles, for wheels and punches and all those various other things. So I imagine nowadays more and more of the riders will be riding tubeless so they can prevent punches as much as possible. But I think it's a really key race. All the riders love it. I think it's a real spectacle and a very, very, very important race in the calendar.
Now, as we mentioned, we're determinedly seeking out reasons to be cheerful. And one not to overlook is the exponential growth and the continually rising standard of women's racing in this country. And when you look at the start list for this edition, Sophie Lewis from Das Hansling, Mary Wilkinson from Team Boom Pods, Flora Perkins from Fenix de Koenig, Joe Tindley from Pro Noctis, Heidi Kjeldsen, 200 Degrees Coffee, another former British Criterium champion. I mean, there is quality throughout this field. We're not looking at a scene setter for the men's race. This is a separate event with a very, very strong field.
Without a doubt. And when you look at the teams that are turning up, they're all bringing the best riders to this particular event. Everybody wants to win it. All the riders want to win this race. And it requires such brilliant bike handling skills. Normally, the field dwindles down, doesn't it? I think there's probably around about 119, 120 riders start, but probably about 25 or 30 make the end. A bit like Paris-Roubaix, your luck on the day can determine whether you're going to be in that group of 30 or not, because if you're one of those individuals that has a technical problem or your positioning's not great and a break goes, then it's highly unlikely you're going to be able to catch it due to the nature of the roads and the nature of the riders and how they ride for this particular event. So you've got to be on your game, and looking at these squads that are coming, there's some seriously strong women riders that will be, I'm sure, gunning for victory.
It's a super hard race, and who knows it better than Sian Botley of Hutchinson Brother UK. Sian has ridden every edition of the women's race, and as a child, she used to go and watch the men's race. It's a course that she knows intimately, making her a very, very qualified source. Let's hear now from Sian.
How many times have I done the race now? Well, I've done it every year it's been on, so 6 or 7. It's just something a bit different that we don't have anything else like that in this country. And I think it throws a lot of people. The fact that there is the kind of the off-road elements to it, perhaps not quite so much now as it did a few years ago, because the rise of the gravel scene in this country has been quite steep over the last couple of years. And there's a lot of riders that are good cyclocross riders and stuff like that, that makes the off-road bits easier for people. But I think you're perhaps always going to have an affinity to a local race that you've kind of grown up watching. And that's definitely the Cycle Classic for me. I grew up going to watch it with Dad, and he knew the roads like the back of his hand. And now that's the same for me. I know every corner of that circuit. I actually used to work in an office that was on the Borough on the Hill circuit, one you do 3 times. The roads are very familiar to me, and I think that definitely makes it quite special. I think the biggest thing about it is you have to be smart when you're riding those off-road bits, because like, you don't want to be fully on someone's wheel because you can't see what's coming. You can't see if there's going to be an enormous hole, which is fairly likely on some of the sectors. I think there's definitely an element of making your own luck in the Cycle Classic. obviously there's always going to be certain things that you can't avoid, but you can make life easier for yourself by riding sensibly. And I think the rest of the circuit needs to not be underestimated either. I think it could quite easily lull you into a false sense of security if you are new to the race, because the first 15K, I reckon, is pretty open. The roads are quite wide, it's all quite safe. And then you turn into Alston and you're immediately on a road that's wide enough for two people. And then there's kind of grass up the middle, and then you're off onto all the narrow little lanes, and you're on pretty narrow roads for the next kind of 50, 60K. It can blow to pieces quite easily if it's a hard race. So although skills are a big part of it, you definitely just need to use the skills that you'd use in any other road race and be sensible with your positioning and just use your head really and conserve energy where you can, because it's really quite a hard course from a up and down perspective as well as the technical nature of it. The most likely scenario based off of the last few years, how the race has played out, is that it will be a reduced bunch sprint. So I think it's quite an attritional course in general, which ends up with the bunch kind of whittling down. I don't think there's been many more than 30 people left at the end kind of going for the win. Yeah, you can definitely play a team game. Not necessarily going to reveal what ours is, but you definitely can do that.
So wonderful to hear that from Sian, Phil. I mean, it's impossible to overstate how valuable her knowledge will be to Hutchinson Brother UK. She's already led a recce ride around the lanes of Euston and its immediate vicinity. Fair to say, I think, that she knows every inch of the Cycle Classic course.
Without a doubt. And the managers will be really well prepared too, with very, very clear race strategies. And when you look at who's won these races in the past, I mean, particularly the women's side, obviously the first year it was run as Bex Durrell, obviously very, very capable rider. And year after that, Katie Archibald. So you see, it really lends itself well to these, if you look at those individuals, very strong criterium riders in their own rights too. So I just wonder whether that kind of that raw power that they possess is one of the key rider attributes that actually makes a successful winner of Cycle Classic.
I mean, just in commercial terms, Phil, Anexo and CAMS are on board for the Cycle Classic. We're seeing Rafa and What Bike already starting to activate their sponsorship of the Lincoln Grand Prix. I mean, is there a positive story to tell here, that the blue ribbon British races are attracting sponsors?
Yes, indeed. So new sponsors have emerged for 2023. And in fact, you've only got to look at Ian Watson's squad. We've done a move to co-title this year because he's got a bigger, better, larger spending sponsor, which is great. If I look back at part of our journey in the sport, invariably what we've done is when we've sponsored teams, it's bought other sponsors to either the sport or the team, and we've either moved from title to co-title or gone off to sponsor a different team. So what I'm not saying there is it's all down to us. I'm not saying that. But actually, the more commercial people are in a sport, other businesses get attracted to that and they wonder why you're there, and then perhaps want to accrue the same benefits that perhaps they perceive might be being gained by you. There is and there are sponsors coming to the sport. I think that we just have to lift more stones and look in this long grass to find some new names, because entry into domestic sport, the actual cost of entry is not significant relative to other sports. So if we looked at football, we looked at rugby, some of these real kind of big, big number sports, you can get a lot of branding exposure for not a lot of money. So I think if we are going to be in a recession, if we start to talk about getting value for money, then that is probably a pretty good thing for cycling, because it does offer that. And I know that because we've been looking at our return ROIs for many, many years now. And you know, we get a good ROI out of the things that we spend our money on. So it is there. I just think we need to have a sort of perhaps a slightly better effort, better coordinated effort to bring additional sponsors to the sport at all levels.
Well, hear, hear, Phil. I mean, that's a powerful message that I don't think is delivered often enough, that a business like Brother UK, a major business, finds that cycling delivers ROI year after year. And it's wonderful to hear, and it's great that these races, whether it be Rafa and What Bike at Lincoln or Anexo and CAMS at the Cycle Classic, wonderful that they're attracting new sponsors even during these very challenging times. And that leads us rather nicely onto our concluding thought, which is reasons to be cheerful. And I hope that doesn't sound tin-eared or tone-deaf to the challenges that our teams, riders and races are facing. We know there are very real problems, but we know also that there are very dedicated people determined that the show will go on. You know, we've talked already about Cold Dark North, Yon Bonk Crew, Mark Etches. I mean, there's a lot of good people out there fighting the good fight, and that's something to celebrate. We've got new and creative race organisers putting on brilliant races. We've got some new money coming into the sport. We've got an abundance of British talent, whether it be 16-year-old Kat Ferguson or the most recent Rainer graduates, you know, Harrison Wood, called up by Cofidis for his first Monument Classic at Milan-San Remo, Sam Watson on the attack at Nocera Corsa. I mean, the talent pipeline certainly hasn't run dry. And to cap it all off, later this year we'll have the UCI World Championships on British soil in Glasgow. I don't think the sport has run out of road just yet, Phil. I mean, there's a brighter future on the horizon.
Without a doubt, I'm what's called a positive pragmatist. So you have to deal with the uncomfortable truths, no point running away from them. But when you're dealing with uncomfortable truths, what you've got to do is have a plan. I think that's the only thing that's lacking that I can see at the moment is I haven't seen a strategic plan anywhere that says, okay, the pathway out of this looks a bit like this. It's sort of being left to people as individuals to sort of go away and do it individually rather than as a huge coordinated effort. But if you look at the various different pockets that you've just described there, there are new sponsors and the B-race scene is thriving. And we've got a lot of passionate people that are doing their best out there to keep things moving. Then I think that's pretty good. And that's a pretty good place to start. And this isn't the first time that the sport's been in difficulty. Talk to any retired professional that has raced 15, 20 years ago, and they'll talk to you about the highs and lows of commercial sponsorship, sponsors coming, sponsors leaving, you know, teams collapsing. It's just part of the sport. The main thing is let's not panic, but more importantly, let's try and get a plan together and bring the talent, the organisers, the teams, BC, all the relevant stakeholders, let's get that better coordinated and then let's get a plan moving in order to begin to improve things. So it all is not lost. There's a lot still to gain. And I think that's the key point that I'm coming at this from is we can easily drown in negativity, but instead let's just really look at it and let's stay pragmatic about it, but with a positive outlook that it can be turned around.
Well, 100%. I mean, let's stay positive. Let's celebrate those who are fighting to keep the sport on the road. But as you rightly say, Phil, let's get a plan in place. Let's get all the stakeholders around the table, whether that be British Cycling, Sweet Spot, GCN, or even Sport England and the DCMS. Let's get all the stakeholders around the table and build a way out of this. We certainly don't lack talent. We don't lack passion. And we'll see both this Sunday at the Inexo Cams Women's and Junior Cycle Classic. Now, somebody we absolutely know will be there is Brother UK sponsor Velo UK. That's Larry Higmott. You can follow Larry for live updates from the race on Twitter at Velo UK or at Aussie Larry. And you can also follow Brother Cycling. We're at Brother Cycling on all three channels. Phil, thank you very much again for joining me today. And thank you to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.